Hello and welcome to Intrepid Heroes Presents, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Kim Franzen. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, John.
Yeah, did I say that right? I know I spelled it wrong earlier.
You got it right. You're not the first one. So first one I ever got mentioned on a podcast today, misgendered me. And on the following episode, he ended up apologizing. So don't worry about it.
Oh, he misgendered while he was talking to you?
Or? Well, he thought my name was Kim. And obviously in a lot of countries, that's a female name. So he just took the assumption and ran with it. And when he then heard my voice, he was like, oh. I caught something wrong.
Ah, got it. Okay, so he did realize it. That's all I wondered.
He did.
Yeah. All right. So Kim is the author or co-author of more than 40 published RPG works, as well as the past editor for D20PRSD.com, where he had his hand in another 30-plus titles. More recently, he's focused on his self-publishing endeavors, including his Keeping It Classy series for 5th edition. You can also find Kim on his blog on the D20 Radio Network every Friday. So, Kim, actually, it sounds like you're really, really busy doing this. Is this what you do for a living, or do you actually have another job, too?
I have another job as well, but one of the editors I've worked with in the past has called me the busiest man in gaming, because in his words, I'm prolific, so...
Yeah, I was going to say, you've been very prolific with your writing here. Where does all this inspiration come from?
Well, the original inspiration, book-wise, has... No, actually, there's two to three sides to this. Talking purely within the gaming world, there is a source of inspiration, a man called Owens Casey Stevens, who most of us probably know. And he authored back in... 1997 or something like that, one of my very favorite RPG books that I still read it regularly, which was a Star Wars Starships of the Galaxy book. It's an absolute favorite of mine because, hey, who doesn't love starships? But it's always like rumbled around in the back of my head since reading this that, you know, fiddling around with creating starships and so on, that, okay, maybe I should give this a go. And in the past, Paizo ran this competition called RPG Superstar ran for 9 seasons. And for the first 6 seasons, I did not take part because life happened. I ran for season 7, which I can't remember what year it was, and my contribution was abysmal. It was absolutely horrible. But a couple of seasons later, one evening, like, a week before the end of the competition, something like that. My wife basically kicks me up the rear and goes, well, you keep talking about this. Make that damn item and get on with it. And I did. That ended up going on into one of the later rounds where I then dropped out. But basically, it gave me a taster. Especially an editor with Fat Goblin Games, a man called Lucas Palazzari, who was giving a review of it. He was basically reviewing a lot of the stuff on the site, and he reviewed the item and a map I'd made. And I'd basically misinterpreted the rules for the map around ever so slightly, and he had misinterpreted them the same way. And I just went, okay, well, clearly I'm not alone in what I'm doing here. And a couple of months later, an open call went out for Rusted Iron Games by a man called Russ Brown. And he put out an open call for people to submit books into him. And basically, I sent him an idea for something I had, which was a little tiny dwarf book. 2 months later, something like that, 3 months maybe, that book came out, and I've been writing ever since, which was in late 2016.
Wow, so you've done quite a bit here in just short amount of time. Now, you mentioned your original impetus for this was kind of starship kind of things. It looks like a lot of your publishing, though, is more in the fantasy area. So
that's true, and it's that is basically a lack of opportunity. Now the Starfinder is out, it has an OGL, as an open game license. Writing for it is no problem. But there was no other Starship game that had that before that. Not really. Or at least not with the same impetus. And while I love starships and Star Wars, Star Trek and all that, I do also love my fantasy just as much. And fantasy, to a lot of people, for whatever reason, is a lot more approachable when it's in book form and when it's in fantasy form. Whereas films and movies and all this, for some reason, take better on the big screen. I had some theories at some point that I've forgotten about why this is, but basically it's to do with the fact that it's much easier for you to relate back to something that you already know how works. Like, everybody understands how a sword and a shield works, but not everybody understands how a photon missile works. And basically, it's a matter of, well, Pathfinder had the open game license, and that was what was selling at the time, so it was what I wrote for, basically. Now that they've opened up, I suppose technically speaking, they had opened up 5th edition before, but I wasn't playing that so much at the time. And there was no Starfinder until, well, as you know, 2017. So yeah, it's just a matter of opportunity. But it's basically a matter of... Part of it is that I love both fantasy and sci-fi. But it's also a matter of decision. I have this theory that there are some of the freelancers out there who specialize a lot in their one gaming system, which is great. But it could come back to bite them if that system, for whatever reason, rolls onto, say, 6th edition D&D, which is probably quite a few years in the future, but we all know eventually it's likely to happen. And I think that a lot of the people who were so focused on Pathfinder 1, for example, are a little bit caught at the moment with Pathfinder 2, because not all of them are willing or able to move on to a new system. And unfortunately, my own experience is like there's a lot of vocal support for Pathfinder 1. Unfortunately, that vocal support is only vocal, and quite a lot of them don't see the sales that they used to do for Pathfinder 1. And if you're a freelancer, especially if you want to make this your living, you need to make certain you're not standing on just one leg. You have to have multiple choices and multiple places to get support from. Fair enough that you're focusing 90% of your endeavors on one, because that's the one that pays the bills. That's just how it works. But you need to have something to fall back on in case that leg disappears under you. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of interest and planning.
So, yeah, kind of along those lines, I guess one of the things that you've kind of branched into more Starfinder has been this Destiny Aurora Kickstarter that recently has launched. Can you tell us a little bit about this RPG adaptation and what role you played in it? Kind of one of the things you wrote for it.
Sure. Back in June of last year, as in 2019, Frank Sanger, who is the author of the Destiny Aurora series of books and graphic novels, put out a call for authors and editors and so on, because he wanted to adapt his universe to Starfinder. And the Destiny Aurora universe is sort of I think the best explanation anybody came with is it's a generous mix of Guardians of the Galaxy and Star Trek. You have a group of heroes who go out to solve whatever it is they do, and they're either the good guys, bad guys, or mercenaries. But at the same time, you have a bit of the play from Guardians of the Galaxy. But especially if you're the good guys, you have this whole, I wouldn't call it civilization, but this whole law organization behind you that sort of helps you do your missions and helps you move along and so on. And what Frank needed was somebody with the skills and the technical knowledge of Starfinder to write for it. And Frank got a guy called John Vogt on board, who was writing for Paizo at the time. I'll be honest, I'm not certain if John is still with Paizo, because his name seems to have disappeared in the void, so I don't know. But he had written quite a lot, like The Races and so on, before. And I was brought on to do there's two mini-adventures inside it. There's a reputation system that he wanted in, that I wrote for him. And there's a couple of monsters and that sort of thing. And yeah, he launched the Kickstarter at the end of December, and it funded in a day. So he was over the moon. and I know that one of the... Well, the next stretch goal that's coming up is me adding another scenario to the hardcover. So it was quite interesting, but it was also a unique perspective of it, because normally when you get an assignment, you get like, you either get the a very specific assignment for write me this, which so we call it write to order, let's call it that, or you get something very loose that you've written yourself and defined yourself that you're pitching out. Well, this was sort of a mix of it, because Frank already knew what his universe looked like, but a lot of the universe wasn't defined in writing yet. So it's a matter of working with him to try and come up with both iconic settings or iconic pieces of his setting and making them work within the Starfinder framework. One of the scenarios, for example, takes part on an ice planet, basically a moon with it's a high security prison. And he'd had a few pieces of information where, like, high security prison, where it was, what it was called, and that was basically it. And together I sort of developed that world, you know, planet or moon into something for that adventure, specifically for that mini adventure, which he then took and put into the universe. So we now have a name for the warden. We know roughly how many prisoners are there, and how many bays there are, and so on. How you get to and from the planet, and that was something that was really interesting, because it gave you a way of looking at it that I hadn't tried before. Is that normally either they already know what they want you to do, or it's just write something. And having to do it this way was a really cool challenge, to be honest. Especially because it gave you a chance to, well, you got to mold a bit of the universe without it just being yours, which was quite fun.
So did you have to read through his books prior to this, or were you already familiar with him?
I wasn't familiar with him at the time. I had seen one of the comics, but the comics are a lot, I wouldn't call them shallower, but they have to skirt certain of the details because space constraints. So I knew about the comics, and I obviously put myself a bit more into it before contacting Frank to begin with, because I wanted to make certain what is this universe, what it's about, that sort of thing. But yeah, I ended up sitting down and reading all the novels, more or less concurrently, actually, with writing for it, because I wanted to find these, what made Destiny or Warrior what it was, especially because I had to write some of the rules for his characters, so I had to know the characters. And sometimes that was a matter of you had to just, this character might only have appeared in one scene. So you went in, you got everything out of it you could by reading this multiple times over, and then picking it apart and trying to go, okay, well, we have this guy here. What's the race? What sort of weapon do they use? And so on and so forth.
So did you have to flesh out new races, or are they mostly Terran? I'm not familiar with them.
The races were written by John. But it's quite a big universe. I think just in the core book, off the top of my head, apart from humans, I believe it's like 8 other races that's in there. And it's everything from a new version of the android that's in Starfinder as well, where one that's a lot more robotic, all the way over to a race of fish people. And the race that I think is going to be everybody's favorite, which is basically a cat girl in space. That's what that is. It's sort of become the mascot of the franchise.
Wow. I saw this a couple of weeks ago. I think you posted it or somebody else. And so I've backed it as well. I'm pretty excited to see it coming out here later this year.
Well, if you check out there's a plush doll for the character called Flibby Yars. That's cat girl. And quite frankly, I think that's the one everybody's going to want to play, because it just looks like good fun. There's a couple of the other races. There's one I've got my eye on as well for when it comes out that I really like the look of. But I think the races are a bit more diverse than they are in Starfinder, probably because there's more of them. But it's like one of the things I'm missing from Starfinder is the aquatic race, at least from the core book. I know they're in the Alien Archives and so on, but they weren't a part of the core, and here they are. Now, I am going to have to try and convince Frank to make some sort of dog people, but maybe...
So I'm kind of curious, in Denmark, is there a lot of Starfinder playing groups there?
Denmark is generally, I would more say Denmark is mixed into the people who play D&D and everybody else. There is a lot of groups that play D&D, but the main problem for Denmark is it's cost, quite frankly. Almost all everybody who's below the age of 40 or speaks English to some degree, so the language barrier isn't too bad. But unfortunately, like the Starfinder Core rulebook is what, $40, I think it is. Over here, it's more like it's close to the equivalent of 100. Because of taxation and imports on and shipping. So it gets very expensive very quickly. It means that people love PDFs. But groups, well, I mean, the Danish population could disappear in New York and be lost, basically. So there's only 5 or 6 million of us. But the groups that are there tend to be quite active. Like there is obviously Facebook groups and so on. And some of them are, some of the communities are really open. But the community is very young because so many of them have been brought in by 5th edition D&D. Mm. So it's what everybody knows and what everybody compares to. There's not that much, many people playing Starfinder yet, but I do hope it's something that'll come. And I know, well, just yesterday, as a matter of fact, I saw somebody putting up a Starfinder scenario like 40 kilometers from where I'm living. So Starfinder Society, well, I think I might be going next weekend, depending on how I can get the wife to look after the kids and so on.
Yeah, it's kind of, I played D&D growing up and everything, and I have played some Pathfinder, but when Starfinder came out, it's like, yeah, that's it for me. And so that's my primary focus here. But it's even, you know, I'm like 10 miles from Paizo's headquarters. Mm-hmm. And so even here, it's hard. You know, it took us 2 years to get regular groups meeting and lots of people showing up. And even then, we're still a lot smaller than the Pathfinder population, it seems like, you know.
I think that, again, it comes with the territory because, as I said, sci-fi works better for the big screen. Starfinder, to me, apart from Star Wars, is the first real success story or open access, if you can call it that, for a D20 system to sci-fi. I think from what I've seen and from what I've understood, Starfinder was a runaway success compared to what they were expecting when they launched it, because there had been no really big sci-fi games. Now, Star Wars obviously had Saga Edition and the D20 version and so on, but again, they all seem to be smaller. I don't think I've ever seen anybody advertising a group for that. Now, that may have been because I was younger and not as connected and so on, but even today, it's like most of the games you see that are advertised, if they're playing, they're playing Pathfinder, they're playing D&D, they're playing Starfinder. And then there's a few of them who are playing something else, including things like FFG, Star Wars, and so on. So, opportunity, I think.
No, I'm excited, and I hope it continues to grow. So, I hope so. Yeah, so Kim, you've had several different roles. You know, you've been a freelance writer, you've been an editor, and now you're kind of publishing your own material. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey through these and kind of what challenges you faced?
Sure. Well, I started as a freelance writer. That was relatively straightforward. You contacted people, heard if they were interested, or when they had had the open calls. It's unfortunately dropped a little off in time. And you established yourself. People got to know you. Maybe if hopefully they'd like what you wrote. But in 2017, I think it was, I was contacted by a guy I've worked with a lot by now called Troy Daniels. And Troy goes, look, I've got a role here with D20 PFSRD. We're looking for an editor. I'm currently doing the sci-fi line, but the publisher would like to put out some Pathfinder and some 5th edition as well. Would you be interested? And I went, as long as he knows I've never done this before, I'll be happy to give it a go. And I think it was a month later, John contacted me and said, look, yeah, go for it. Let's get started. So the first thing I did was to set up an open call and try and get it all scheduled in. Like, I wanted to be able to see, like, in 6 months' time, what are the releases we're putting out for D20 PM City, because there was no plan. And I don't like not having a plan. So I put out the call and I spoke to all these freelancers, and then the first one came in. And as I sit down and go, okay, one, I have got a lot to learn, and two, I've got a lot to teach. So with every single freelancer I had, it was set up so that we got it all in, and the first thing I would do would be clear my schedule for 14 days of anything that wasn't my day job, and then focus on this. So I'd go through it and I would put in, but if he'd written 20 pages, I would have maybe somewhere between 200 and 300 comments on this one document. Wow. But wow, basically it was a matter of trying to explain, well, why do you take the choices you've made here? Now, they may be wrong or right, that depended, but it's like, why do you do this? This is what you should consider. And basically tutor this new writer, because they were all new, are the ones I work with, to sort of get them to think what they were putting into writing, and use the tools like things like Grammarly, things like the Hemingway app, stuff that just tightened up your writing. And then when the writing was tightened up, I'll make certain to use the right rules language, the formatting. Did you remember to think about this? What will the players do when you give them this option? And I had several of them come back multiple times over. And what I saw was that each time my amount of comments was more or less halved. So if he started with 300 the first time around, they'd maybe have 150 the second time, then 75. Because some of these comments that were there were obviously reiterations of themselves. But by hammering it in like that, it basically got taught to them. And quite frankly, got taught to myself as well, because I was having to sit there and analyze everything they wrote in a manner I'd never done before.
So had you been trained as an editor, or you were just kind of figuring this out as you're going along?
I am what we in Danish call autodidact, which means self-taught. It was figuring out as I went along. I will say, though, that I did have, obviously, I had Troy helping me. I had John Rice helping me, who's the publisher and who has a fantastic eye for detail. Especially, he's an expert on the Open Game License, and any discrepancy immediately springs out to him. But I think it was about a year in, and I came across a book that I wish I'd had from the beginning, quite frankly, which is a book called Writing with Style, An Editor's Guide. It was written by a guy called Ray Vallis, I believe. I'm not certain how to pronounce his surname. And it was basically taking all these things that an editor does or should know, and trying to codify them so that an author can sit with this book as well and go, okay, I'm doing this now, page through this book. Okay, what am I doing wrong or right, or what should I keep in mind? But it was basically a self-tutoring process, and a lot of it was going in and both examining their writing, but also your own likings. Like your own preferences. So if you had a preference for a certain type of writing, why was that your preference? Like I had several of the ones that unfortunately didn't make it, who had a distinct proclivity for writing stories. When you write an adventure, for example, you're not writing a story, you're writing a framework for the characters and the players to interact with. You're not telling them what to do. And a lot of the stuff you'll see in our line of business from new people is people telling that story or world building, which is not what they're supposed to be doing for that necessarily. Like I had one guy who thankfully made it and was actually got pretty good, so I can use him as an example. But his first submission contained more world building than it did the actual thing I'd asked him to write. And it was a matter of basically going in with the pruning shears and going, okay, look here, this needs to go, this needs to go, this needs to go, and this is why. This is a magic item. You write, oh, this is often made by the Brotherhood of the Black Hand. Yeah, but what happens if this DM doesn't have a Brotherhood of the Black Hand? If you wrote crazy cultists, well, chances are he'll have some of them, but he won't have the Brotherhood of the Black Hand necessarily. obviously, if you're writing your own setting or working within a world setting, go ahead. Use it all you want. But not if you're trying to keep it generic enough that it could be dumped into this. So it's basically both teaching them and myself to keep that sort of thing in mind when you were writing something. And then, of course, there was all the use of grammar, the formatting, and all this stuff that comes along with it. Thankfully, I didn't have to learn layout, thank God, because then I'd never be done. I had a very good layout team for it, but it was still a matter of learning how to set up your books and your products so that they're understandable, so that they're easy to read for anybody sitting with them, because that matters as well. Because if you just get a block of text, chances are somebody will zone out after the first paragraph or two. But if you keep it in nice, easy chunks or separate it in a way that makes sense, then you keep your audience captive for longer.
Now, when you went into your own publishing, did you have to pick up additional skills on top of what you've already done?
Not to begin with, but lately, yes. When I started with my own self-publishing, it was the Keeping It Classy, the Barbarian book. It was a matter of I'd sat down and I'd looked at some of the classes in the 50s and I'd gone, I need more options for my characters. So I sat down and I wrote out all these iconic barbarian-like characters that I could think of. It was, and even the ones that were like strange. So it's like the first one that springs to mind when everybody hears barbarian is Conan. All right, no problems there. Some people might think of the Barbarian Brothers from the Barbarians film, which is ancient, or start thinking outside the box. Like, for example, He-Man could theoretically be a barbarian. Same could Hulk and Thor and all those characters. And I just went down the list and just went, okay, these are all the ones I can think of. Now I want to make it work. So wrote all that up. And then I sat down and I spoke to a layouter that I know called Bob Cravenstein. And I went, okay, Bob, I have a cover, I have the content, and I trust you to find the pictures for this and give me a layout. So he sent me back a couple of samples. Okay, this is what I suggest for layout, and we decided one together. And then he basically went crazy with the public domain images, finding things that Bob has a fantastic knowledge of classic art. Better than probably anybody else I've encountered so far. And he's able to use this to fill in the blanks, if it makes sense, in the books. So he will find artwork that you might not even think of. There's a particular artwork from one of the later ones I remember where I had written a love domain. And everybody thinks of people like Freya and Aphrodite and so on. And what he found was, if I remember right, some Sumerian goddess of love that somebody had captured back in the 16th century. And the image was in the public domain, and it just caught the essence of that particular domain so well that, quite frankly, I don't know how he does it. Lately, though, this isn't out yet, but it's hopefully coming late January, fingers crossed. I've been looking into it, trying to basically self-publish some of my own adventures. I have some adventures in my gaming past that I have a real love for, that I absolutely adore, but they do not hold up well, and they're not easy to convert. So I went in and looked at this adventure. It's an old Ravenloft adventure. And I looked at the adventure and went, okay, so we have this place, and I want to write a similar adventure to this. Obviously, the setting can be roughly the same, but the setting was never fleshed out beyond like a page. So I've got a lot of work to do to flesh it out. But I want a spiritual successor to this. I want what I experienced 20-odd years ago for somebody else, but with a modern system. And obviously 26 years ago, it was AD&D, which was lethal to the characters. And you can't quite capture that, but you can still capture the dread of it. So wrote all that up. And then came the time where I had to develop new skills, because I was looking at this going, okay, the original adventure is very bare bones when it comes to art. that is not the modern style. Modern adventures and modern books and so on tend to have a lot of art. Mm-hmm. And I basically went in and went, okay, what, how do I do this? Because I can't draw. I am horrible at it, but I'm good at Googling stuff. and I can use Photoshop. So I basically learned how to make and not create art, but evocative art out of public domain stuff. Found that, for example, the Library of Congress, their public domain has an excellent selection, as has one of the Danish museums of art for stuff that's in public. And of course, public domain, you can more or less fiddle around with it as you want. So if you put mm-hmm. on the right filters, found this image of a graveyard, among other things, that it looked in broad daylight, clearly put it, but give it the right filters and it looks like it is a absolutely horrible storm going on. And it's pouring it down in black and white, you know, that old graphite mm-hmm. sketch style. Mm-hmm. And it just, well, I've had to develop that skill because if I had to get an artist to draw all this, I'd bankrupt myself, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And obviously I still want a nice cover and so on, so that's likely going to be custom or stock art at least. But to capture the feel that I wanted out of these scenes and so on, in that I basically had to go in some cases it went the other way. I found a really cool piece of art that I wanted to use, so I went the other way and just went, okay, well, I've got this, how can I fit this into my adventure now? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've had to learn that way around. And obviously it's also a matter of learning, like, okay, how do you set this up, how do you make certain this is actually, if not profitable, at least it goes to zero. I've still got some way to go on that one. mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a whole new set of skills you end up developing or finding that you need. Like, I was not a great Photoshop user at all, and now I have got at least passable. And I'm looking at, hopefully sometime this year, learning InDesign so that I can start at least giving, if not doing the layout myself, then at least be more able to give my layouter an idea of what I want out of this. Because at least then I can like communicate to him in the same language, go, okay, look, I want the margins to be this type, da 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 da. Because I sometimes find that lacks a lot. Now, that may just be my experience, but I can tell somebody what I like, but I can't tell them what I want, if that makes sense, because you don't have a common frame. Language.
Right. You don't know your own preferences
exactly
for everything that's available. You just know when you see something you like.
It's, exactly.
It's a very common design issue for everything. You know, mm-hmm. we know what we like, but we can't tell you what it is.
Yeah, I once heard it described as, if you give the same task to an architect and an engineer, they'll come up with two different solutions. They need somebody to talk between them so that they come up with the same solution. And that's mm-hmm. basically what I'm hoping that learning InDesign would do for me. It's basically a matter of picking up that frame. Yeah, I apologize for the sound in the background. My dog has decided to kill his duck. So
That's okay. I can hardly hear that. One of the things I do notice is the every once in a while the signal comes in a little weird, and I don't know, because it's actually recorded on your end. Hopefully it turns out okay. I'm not really sure.
Fingers
crossed.
Not
it's not so consistent that I think it's going to be problematic.
No, I'm not quite certain, but it's probably because I'm on a laptop with a Wi-Fi connection, could be. So you know how finicky some of these are. So,
right.
But my wife has decided to steal my desktop. So,
so what type of advice do you have for people interested in getting into writing and editing and maybe even self-publishing?
Well, the first advice is do it. Because there's a lot of people who talk about doing it, but that's it. Or who spend an eternity planning. Certainly as an author, you can't publish until you've written something. And sometimes that means, no, actually there's a better way of putting it. You can't write good stuff until you've written a lot of shit, quite frankly. I think it was Hemingway who said it like that. But it's true. Until you know and until you've developed your skills and tried it, it's like learning to draw. Your first drawings will look bad. But if you keep going, then eventually they'll hopefully become good or at least passable. Ask people for advice. There's you found it as well. The Freelance Forge, for example, is a great source of feedback for people. If they want to, if they want to become an editor, then reach out to somebody who's done editing. Ask what is needed. Read that writing with style guide. If you want to self-publish, there's a whole host of DMs Guild, especially people who will happily help you out. Unfortunately, one of the big DMs Guild communities got closed down recently. That's one of those things that happens. Not quite certain what happened in the background there. But there's plenty of them still for things like Genesis and what's it called, the Solarisian Vault, the one for Savage Lands. There's a lot of people who are out there to willing to help. There's even this, I think they're opening a new course like next week. I believe they're due to reveal it sometime this week. It's called the RPG Writers Workshop. And I tried to take part last year. Unfortunately, time caught up with me and had to focus on some other projects. But they are a matter of, they'll sit down, they have a whole course of how to write your own adventure. Now, there's two lines, and one of them is free. So there's, and it's pretty much as good as the paid one, so there's no reason not to. Mm-hmm. So if nothing else, look up the Freelance Forge and check out the RPG Writers Workshop, and then reach out to people. You'll find that, yeah, there are some of us who are not very nice people, but most of the freelancers and so on out there are more than willing to help.
Yeah, it's been my experience. Even the folks, the developers and designers have been all really open to explain things and say, hey, just let me know what you're interested in writing and what you're good at, but write something so that we can see what you can do. You know, have some material that we can look and say, yeah, that fits what we're looking for. Or maybe I can provide advice to you on how to improve, rather than saying, I would really like to do this, but I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So.
And it's back in the day, on the D20 radio, I even put up two blog posts on, this is where you start. But one of the advice is, write something. If it's bad, write some more. If it's still bad, keep going. And learn to accept a no, because your first few ones are very likely to be nope, not interested, not yet, you're not ready yet. But if you don't keep going, you certainly won't make it.
For sure. So what's next for Kim? What's on your plate for the future?
A lot is the answer. That editor who once called me the busiest man in gaming, well, he claims I'm about to try and break my own record. Because I had this rather mental plan for 2020. I want to release two products a week throughout the entire 2020. Now, that's a minimum. Some of them are already made, and I have a buffer already, which are... it is a series of race books for Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition, along with something new for me, where I am trying my hand at cartography. I want to learn how to make old school maps, because there's only really one or two out there who do them, and a lot of them are very nice looking, but they don't seem to be too focused on actual usability, and I want to try and turn that the other way around. So that's starting... Well, I'm hoping they come out on Thursday, and I'm hoping the first of the race books comes out tomorrow.
Wow.
Beyond that, there's that scenario that I'll, fingers crossed, be writing if the Kickstarter hits that stretch goal. There is another Kickstarter that I'm doing work for that I can't really reveal any details on yet. And I'm planning on keeping up with the Keeping It Classy books. Now, the first three released... throughout the last 6 months of 2019. The next one will be a little delayed because I've got that adventure and so on that needs to come out as well. They're written, but they need to go into edit and layout. So I'm full. obviously, I'm also hoping to pick up something like from Paizo or something like that. I'm certainly going to be trying, but my hope, fingers crossed, is to one day be able to say, look, here you go, I'm the first Danish full-time freelancer on RPGs, because there is currently There used to be a couple, but as far as I'm aware, there's only two of us at the moment. One girl called Anne, who does 5th edition, as far as I can tell, pretty much exclusively. And then there's me, who does everything. And yeah, I think everybody wants to one day make it full-time. But it requires a lot of work. So, fingers crossed.
Well, it seems like you've got a bigger head start than a lot of folks I've seen that have even gone on to be hired by some companies. So I think you're definitely on track to get something special done. And I can't believe you're going to release two things a week throughout the year. That's just mind blowing.
The funny thing is, there is Owens Casey Stevens, funnily enough,
right,
announced a month and a half ago that he was going to be doing a product a week for all four major systems throughout 2020.
Right.
I made the decision to start doing this a month or so ago before he made that announcement. So I was sat there going, oh, damn, he stole my thunder.
Right. So you can't go say, I'm going to do 104 and 52 when he's already doing his 52 and 52.
Huh? He is doing 208 in 52. wants to do basically, and I really hope he manages, because it is an astonishing achievement if he mm-hmm. does. But his plan is to release something for all 52 weeks, but for Pathfinder 1, Pathfinder 2, 5th edition, and Starfinder. Mm-hmm.
So it's one thing each week, but four versions of it.
Yes.
So yeah, I think that's, if you're actually releasing four separate, completely separate things each week, that would have been crazy.
I know the man is prolific, but
yes,
that would have been mind blowing. I hope he manages it, because mm-hmm. I know he's set his time for it, but I also know that's a lot of work to put yourself through. I think he can do it. I really do. And as I said, I'm kind of hoping to more or less mimic it, but where he's doing it for four different systems, I went, no, I think I'm going to stick with one, because he's doing it full-time and I can't keep up with that.
right. Well, Kim, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. Do you ever get out of Denmark to go to a convention anywhere else, or are you just stuck there?
I had actually planned, whether or not it'll succeed depends a little, because unfortunately, it is rather expensive to travel from here.
I
had a... there's two cons I want to go to. I obviously want to either go to Gen Con or PaizoCon, but there's a little con in Texas called Gamer Nation Con that has been going for, well, this must be the seventh year they're running it, and they are basically going back to where it all started. They were the first D20 and Saga edition podcast out there, and at some point in the past they decided to make a gamer con, and the community around that podcast is fantastic. I've played Warhammer, I've played role-playing games, I've played computer games, I've worked for Blizzard Entertainment, I've been had my fingers in all the gaming communities entities, and there's not a single one like that one. It is the only community I've ever gone in, and I know there's 1,000 people of it, and so many of them feel like family or friends. I want to attend it one day, and that's in the middle of the US. Hopefully I'll get the chance one day to attend PaizoCon, but that's a matter of cost.
Yeah, no, I flew to Copenhagen with my whole family, and it was a little spendy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I know the cost.
Yeah. The problem is just the flight alone. I'm probably looking at some like $1,500.
Right.
That doesn't even include staying anywhere. So
but they have a direct flight from Seattle to Copenhagen.
That helps. I will admit, if I ever make it to the US, I have to admit, while I would love to visit Gamer Nation Con and PaizoCon and so on, that wouldn't actually be my objective for it. There are three guys that I've worked with for, well, more or less since the beginning. The main one being my first editor, Troy Daniels. I want to be able to walk up to him sometime shake his hand, and go, thanks for helping me out. That would be my main goal of going to the US, quite frankly. The cons, yeah, I would love to, especially if one day it was as a guest at PaizoCon. That would be a true honor. But I'd rather meet the people behind the names, if that makes sense. Whether that's editors, writers, or the fans, for that matter. There's something special in that fan interaction. I mean, I had the strange experience one day where I used to work in a geek quote unquote store in Copenhagen called Faro Cigars. It is the biggest comic and role playing game store in the country. One day I used to work in the office there because I was the manager of their website. And one day I get a call from the store and one of the guys is asking me to come down. I'm like, what's going on? Because normally I was only called down if there was a problem or trouble or whatever. And he goes, well, we've got one of our customers who wants to talk to you. I'm like, is that one of my friends? What it turned out to be was a Starfinder player, of all things, who had found my very first Starfinder book called Pirates of the Starstream standing in the store. And he'd put two and two together. He'd gone, is that your web guy? And he wanted an autograph in the book. And I was just blown away. He was like, what the heck happened here? That nothing feels like that. There's nothing like it. And I don't care what anybody says, except maybe my wife. but it's a fantastic experience being able to hear somebody has used something you've written that you've poured your heart and soul into, and they've made it part of their game.
Well, I hope we get you out here sometime. if you end up coming out to PaizoCon, I actually live pretty close. I can put you up for the week. I'll just offer that up.
Hey, I'll keep that in mind, John. I may, well, if everything goes hopefully the way it should, that might actually be a possibility this year, depending on those Kickstarters and how the self-publishing goes. Last year was close. I would actually have made it. Unfortunately, my car broke down, so all the cash I'd stashed aside to go went into fixing that. Hey, life happens sometimes.
Well, it's been really enjoyable chatting with you, Kim. I really appreciate it, and best of luck in the future, and hopefully we'll see you here sometime in the States. If not in Copenhagen or in Denmark, if I get a chance to get out again.
Well, if you make it to Copenhagen, I live an hour away, so that can be arranged. Yep. So